Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We are continuing our look at a statement that was put on the LDS.org website titled Race and the Priesthood. It was released December 6, 2013, and it's meant to give an explanation as to why blacks were not allowed to hold the priesthood up until 1978, when that doctrine was reversed by Spencer W. Kimball, the 12th president of the Mormon Church. Now, did I use the word doctrine? Shame on me, because that's what they're trying to get away from. They don't want you to believe that it was ever a doctrine, that it was merely a theory, and it was actually stated by some in the PR department as a mere folklore, okay, for some of the reasons why blacks were not allowed to hold the priesthood. There were several explanations given, the most prominent, of course, being that blacks in the pre-existence were not as valiant as they could have been. These comments pop up by Mormon leaders throughout its history up until 1978. Although the Mormon Church today wants to get away from the past, now they're doing it in this statement by trying to pin the blame on Brigham Young. And that becomes problematic for us, because when you look at the statements of Mormon leaders up until 1978, it would be very difficult to blame the priesthood ban solely on Brigham Young. Now, yesterday I read some statements that were made by Jesse Embry in a book on this subject. And she pointed out that really you can't divorce Joseph Smith from the priesthood ban entirely, that he certainly did teach certain things that were held by the membership. If you're going to say he didn't prohibit them outright, you certainly have to see that he made statements that would eventually lead to that, if nothing else. Well, I happen to have a book in my hand. It's titled Doctrinal Commentary on the Pearl of Great Price by Hiram L. Andrus. Now, this book is published by Deseret Book Company, owned by the Mormon Church, and the date is 1967. Now, of course, that would be before 1978, so any ideas that we would find in this book relating to the priesthood would certainly reflect the idea that the Mormon Church was espousing prior to 1978. And this is what it says. Now, even though the statement that is now on the LDS.org website tries to protect Joseph Smith and pin it on Brigham Young, this is what this book says on page 402. The former decree of God concerning the Negro has been reaffirmed in modern times. According to George Q. Cannon, and George Q. Cannon was a member of the First Presidency under Brigham Young, according to George Q. Cannon, the prophet Joseph Smith taught the following doctrine, quoting, that the seed of Cain could not receive the priesthood nor act in any of the offices of the priesthood until the seed of Abel should come forward and take precedence over Cain's offspring. Andrus goes on to say, other reports confirm the fact that Joseph Smith taught that the Negro cannot yet receive the priesthood. In May 1879, President John Taylor, that would be the third president of the Mormon Church, and other prominent men in the church who had known the prophet personally discussed the status of the Negro. Among these men was Zebedee Coltrane, who was intimately associated with Joseph Smith and had been appointed by him a member of the First Council of 70 when that council was organized in this dispensation. Now, Zebedee Coltrane is an interesting name that's brought into this discussion, because Zebedee Coltrane was the man who ordained Elijah Abel to be a 70 in the Mormon Church. According to Andrus, President Taylor opened the discussion with the comment, some parties have said to me that Zebedee Coltrane had talked to the prophet Joseph Smith on this subject, and they said that he, Coltrane, thought it was not right for them, that is the Negroes, to have the priesthood. Whereupon Joseph Smith said to him that Peter on a certain occasion had a vision wherein he saw the heaven open and a certain vessel descended unto him, and it was a great sheet, and we know the story that we find in the book of Acts. But it goes on to tell the story about how Coltrane had a disagreement with another Mormon, a man by the name of J.P. Green. And this is very telling what it says in this account.
It says, Brother Coltrane, the spring that we went up to in Zion's camp in 1834, Brother Joseph sent Brother J.P. Green and me out south to gather up means to assist in gathering out the saints from Jackson County, Missouri. On our return home, we got into a conversation about the Negro having the right to the priesthood, and I took the side that he had no right. Brother Green argued that he had. The subject got so warm between us that he said he would report me to Brother Joseph when we got home for preaching false doctrine, which doctrine that I advocated was that the Negro would not hold the priesthood. All right, I said, I hope you will. And when we got home to Kirtland, we both went in to Brother Joseph's office together to make our returns. And Brother Green was as good as his word and reported to Brother Joseph that I had said that the Negro could not hold the priesthood. Brother Joseph kind of dropped his head and rested it on his hand for a minute, and then said, Brother Zebedee is right, for the Spirit of God saith the Negro has no right nor cannot hold the priesthood. He made no reference to Scripture at all, but such was his decision. I don't recollect ever having any conversation with him on the subject afterwards, but I have heard him say in public that no person having the least particle of Negro blood can hold the priesthood.
Well, it sounds to me, according to this story, that Joseph Smith was behind this whole ban.
Sure.
But did he really say that? That's the problem. We're trying to figure out, did he really say this? Was Coltrane telling the truth when he made this comment? Because remember, it was Coltrane who actually ordained Elijah Abel to be a 70. It kind of, maybe I'm missing something here, but it seems like if he had already been told by Joseph Smith that they're not allowed to hold the priesthood, why is he ordaining one to be a 70? That seems confusing to me. But there is a lot of controversy on this subject. In the same book, Anders's commentary on the Pearl of Great Price, page 400, it says, from the information given in the Pearl of Great Price, it is apparent that Cain is the father of the Negro people. The Book of Moses reports that the Lord set a mark upon Cain. Though this statement does not say that the mark consisted of a black skin, it does say at a later point in the record that there was a black skin come upon all the children of Canaan. That the Canaanites were the descendants of Cain is evident from the further statement that, quote, the seed of Cain were black, end quote. Joseph Smith also spoke specifically of the Negroes as being sons of Cain. On another occasion, he referred to them as descendants of Ham, who evidently married a Canaanite woman and thus perpetuated the seed of Cain through the flood. Sounds very similar to what we read yesterday coming from Jesse Embry's book. She makes the same statement that Joseph Smith certainly did make statements that makes it impossible to divorce Joseph Smith from this later priesthood ban. It sounds like there is a connection there that cannot be ignored, although many Mormons would certainly like to ignore that. So what do we do with this? What do we do with this? I mean, it is confusing. There's no doubt about it. There are contradictory statements. It sounds like at one time in history, they wanted to blame Joseph Smith for this teaching. They wanted to place, well, it wouldn't be blame at the time. They would
credit. Yeah, sure.
They wanted to credit Joseph Smith with this teaching.
Especially before 1978, because that's when the doctrine continued all the way till then. So this came from the very beginning. We have lots of quotes on that as well. Before 78. Now,
sure.
After 78, all of a sudden you distance yourself from Joseph Smith, and in 2013 you come up with, well, it was Brigham's fault.
And that just, to me, just seems so amazing, because in one period of time, like you said, we've got to put it on Joseph Smith, and now let's get it away from Joseph Smith. We have to protect him. But at the same time, they have no problem throwing Brigham Young under the proverbial bus and attributing this terrible teaching and for much of Mormonism's history on the second president of the Mormon Church, Brigham Young. As we go on, they want to get this behind them.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, in order to get it behind them, they have to tweak their own history. They can't seem to make up their mind when you look at who is to be credited or blamed, depending on how you look at this, Who do we point to? Now, we know with hindsight that it was a bad decision. It was a bad, it's not even a doctrine anymore. Now it's, you know, who knows what it is.
Theory.
It was a theory. The reasons for it are a theory. Even though, as we've mentioned time and time again, that that's not what the leaders up until 1978 were teaching. They were not teaching it as a theory. They were very clear and very adamant that this had something to do with their behavior in the pre-existence. And they were being punished for something they did or did not do, depending on how you're looking at it, in the pre-existent state before they came into mortality. This is what many Mormon leaders were teaching. And now that's a big theory now. We don't know the reasons anymore. And they might want to blame Brigham Young for this. They might want to attribute all this to theories. But folks, you've got to be honest with yourselves. Do you really think that the leadership until 1978, when they were teaching why blacks were not allowed to hold the priesthood, really looked at that as a mere theory? I don't think so. And we certainly don't get that idea when we read the statements of these leaders.
But again, we said this yesterday, this church is based on public relations. You do have to distance God and Joseph Smith from this teaching and claim it was based on the culture of the day, and then Brigham Young came and put this all together. Without that, what do you have? An organization that claims to represent God and yet was wrong. I mean, remember Fonzie of the Happy Days? He could never say the word wrong. And all the way through these pages that we have printed out from the LDS.org website called Race and the Priesthood, I don't see one word wrong in there at all. It's shifting blame.
Yeah, they're just putting it on Brigham Young, but you cannot forget that Brigham Young was a man who said he never taught anything that was wrong. So if he really believed that he never taught anything that was wrong, he obviously didn't believe that what he was teaching on this subject was wrong.
And he held the title of prophet.
Prophet of the Mormon Church? Must have been deluded. I don't know what other explanation we can come up with that makes even a bit of sense.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Would you like to visit the Holy Land? If so, we've got an opportunity for you. Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson from Mormonism Research Ministry will be hosting a trip to Israel and Turkey in February 2015. We start with an optional 7-day trip to Turkey, as we'll see the 7 churches of Revelation, including Ephesus, Laodicea, and Pergamum. Then, we head to Israel for 11 days, where we'll see amazing sights such as Caesarea, Upper Galilee, the Dead Sea, and Jerusalem. There'll be a special Joel Kramer Day as we climb up to Cave 1 in Qumran and see some incredible biblical sites. Your price includes airfare, 3- and 4-star hotels, professional guides and bus drivers, buffet meals, and all taxes and tips. To learn more, we invite you to visit mrm.org and click on the Israel icon in the top right-hand corner of the page. Every family who signs up receives a complimentary copy of Joel Kramer's Jericho Unearthed. Again, please visit mrm.org to find out more about this exciting trip. No doubt, an experience that will forever change your life.